Welcome to Manager Tools. This week, how to action engagement survey results, chapter one, dimensions. The questions this cast answers are, how should I respond to my engagement survey results? What should I do with my scores on an engagement survey? And how can I improve my engagement survey results? Hey, everybody. We're coming to Detroit. We'll be in Detroit July 18th and 19th for our Effective Manager and Effective Communicator Conference, and we'd love to host you there. We know we've got some great friends in Detroit, and if you have team members who haven't been trained yet or people with whom you'd like to share our guidance, then feel free to send them to our Detroit conference in July on the 18th and 19th. That's a Tuesday, Wednesday. To sign up, go to manager-tools.com/training. I'd love to see you there. We've been talking about engagement surveys. We're operating under the assumption that if you're involved in an engagement survey process, that once you've gotten your results back, you might have questions about how to respond. And so in this guidance, we're going to take an actual engagement survey question by question and show you how to respond to a low score on that question.
Yeah.
We're excited to do.
Now, folks, what that means is, if you haven't listened to our previous guidance on engagement surveys, you may want to go back and do it. And the reason for it is, in our previous engagement guidance, we described the history of engagement and measuring engagement and our concerns with the overall concept.
Mm-hmm.
In the previous guidance, we also gave you an overview of how to help your team get ready for the survey that they're going to be asked to complete prior to completion itself. And in this series of podcasts, we're going to go through and tell you how to take action on the results that you'll get back from your direct and your overall organization's responses.
We're going to take an actual survey, mm-hmm. one that was available in the current year, 2023, and address the over 140 questions it asks and give you specific guidance on what to do and how and why. And this is chapter one, where we'll explain an important part of engagement survey results, which is the use of dimensions or categories, which can make reading your results more difficult. And this is pretty rare for us. The outline for today essentially is one thing, which is the difference between dimensions and questions.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to talk about today and help share, just really honestly educate y'all and help y'all understand what it is that differentiates dimensions in engagement survey speak, buzzwordiness, mm-hmm. and questions. So before that, before we get into the actual questions, well, before we get into the questions that, you know, the survey we're going to talk about asked, because we've chosen a representative survey and how to address those, we do need to talk about dimensions versus questions. It's like a feature, although it's a feature that some of us might consider a bug. Maybe that's too harsh. We're trying to be nice to engagement surveys now. That's our new.
Well, okay, sure. Yeah, no, I'm on. Let's do it.
Okay. All right. We're going to,
Benefit of the doubt or something.
Right.
I can go there.
Okay, cool. Good. It's just like, we're going into it with a good attitude. Okay. It can be really confusing, this piece.
Yeah.
And if we don't explain it, unsuspecting managers could easily be lured down the path, which might have you taking action that wouldn't accomplish anything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So folks, what engagement surveys do, literally, is ask questions of most, if not all, of the employees within an organization and use those answers to create data for individual managers, right? We ask each individual so that we can distill from that an average of how people are feeling within an organization. And we then take that those insights so that we can give specific, when I say we, companies that hold engagement surveys can give specific guidance to address or improve the scores the manager or organization receives.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right. I was worried that we weren't going to talk about the other piece.
Right. The problem is, in doing this, almost all engagement surveys aggregate certain questions into groups they call dimensions or categories or themes. There are different names of them depending on what those engagement survey companies use as their terminology, but questions are grouped into like topic, and these aggregations are both important and dangerous, depending on the audience who's filling out the questions, and then in turn, the organization itself.
Yeah, it's tricky. The dimension, category, the theme, the wording they're using makes it sound like it's very human.
Yeah.
Which, of course, I think is maybe not meant to. It just obfuscates the, like, it clouds what's really going on, which I never love. So, okay. So, again, these aggregations are important. They're dangerous. But first, again, let's explain the idea of the categories.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pretend, you're not going to love this. Let's pretend we were creating an engagement survey.
Okay. Sure. Yeah.
You hate it. Sure. Come along, my friend. Uh-huh. If we were doing this, it sounds like we wouldn't.
We probably wouldn't, but.
Aggregating questions into categories could make it easier to talk about the questions.
Right.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thematically grouping. Sure. Yeah. That makes sense.
I was talking to somebody the other day. You know, they talk about, for memory purposes, they talk about chunking numbers, like big numbers. The mm-hmm. reason phone numbers are divided into 3, 3, 4 is chunking. Your brain does better with 3 or 4 numbers having to be memorized at a time. So they call it chunking. And I was talking to somebody the other day, and you know when you say a number and somebody repeats it back to you?
Yep.
The way they chunked their number was just completely different for me, and it was driving me crazy. And that's important, right? Grouping mm-hmm. is important. And if you group something differently than somebody else, it can be tougher to talk about it, to converse, to have an understanding. It just, there's like that extra friction, there's that extra like beat. He was repeating the numbers back to me and took me, you know, it's like a little bit harder. So, okay, putting everything into groups might make it easier. If you imagine giving out a survey with 100 questions and then having to answer questions about every single question, it becomes really weird, really granular. It's not necessarily a discussion that goes smoothly or is easy to have. Or I do think if a company is trying to put together an engagement survey, they don't want it to be difficult for people. They want it to be smooth, right? Yes. It's got to be like smooth and fast and okay, great. So they chunk these things together into these categories.
Right.
Which, okay, they give you categorical aggregations of related questions, and they're, you know, shown in the survey when you take it. It's like section headings.
Right.
Between groups of questions. And that's what you're going to see in your results. You get your results back. Okay, you're going to see these categories, section headings for these groups of questions. And you probably won't notice them.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Right.
And to your point, Kate, it's like groupings of phone numbers. We know they're there, but we don't know they're there, right? We don't pay attention to the fact that there are the chunks. We know they're there, though. We couldn't not know. In our experience, when individuals are filling these questions out, and mm-hmm. then you, in turn, are reviewing, looking at the survey results itself, you're going to be so focused on getting through the information, that is, the person filling it out, is going to be so focused on filling out right. What did you mention earlier? We're looking at 140 question survey. People are so focused on filling out the questions so they can be done. The questions, the categories or themes are just going to disappear into the background. You're not going to notice them. They're not going to stand out.
It's almost like, you know, it's probably noted somehow, or they're color-coded, or they're in different groupings or on different pages. Like, and also, I would suggest even we can't really speak to it, because I would also assume that every different company who administers these things does it differently.
Oh, absolutely.
So some of them are going to do it color-coded. Some of them are going to do it by page. Some of them are going to do it, you know, every fourth question goes into this category, or every fifth something.
And that's like the thing.
That.
We talked about this in our previous guidance, but the thing about engagement, the overall engagement business, I'm going to call it, is there's no agreed upon grouping.
Yeah.
There's no agreed upon grouping. There's no agreed upon dimension. Exactly. They get to do whatever they want and organize the survey however they'd like. because they're all inventing their own definition of engagement.
Right.
The groupings of categories and the fact that they fall into the background, they almost disappear for the person filling out the questions, or I should say answering the questions, is good. Mm-hmm. Because if the survey has over 100 questions, like the one we're about to go through had, spending any time trying to understand the survey rather than just answering the questions is probably not time well spent.
Yeah.
It's just extra time that you, I mean, it's 140 questions. You don't have time to figure it out before you answer all your questions.
You don't need to know what category a question is in to answer it truthfully and accurately. So while you're taking the survey, not useful to necessarily try to grasp why the categories are what they are and how they're organized. So you go through the survey while you're taking it. You won't notice the categories. They're there. And then how they're going to be used by the survey vendor is where it gets really interesting. As we talk about this, please, y'all, remember all of the data that you're going to receive in your results only comes from the answers your direct and organization gave to the questions. There's no organic data gathered about the categories. Any data proffered to you regarding the categories is an artificial construct, an artifact of the survey vendor, not primary data based on their wholly unscientific, sorry, pards, grouping of questions. Mm-hmm. Different vendors group questions differently, and there are no agreed upon definitions of the categories.
Right.
This is all made up stuff. There's no, oh, this is this and that is, there's no, it's almost unacceptable to call them categories, in that categories, groupings is better in terms of like the background of them, right? A category denotes that there is a reason it would fall into one versus the other.
It's a really good point.
It's like categories of, I don't know, blinds or, you know, curtains or something.
Kate's moving into a new house. Can you tell? Seriously, who uses that as an example?
It has so many really windows, good. Sarah. It has so many, like window coverings. It's difficult. And it has like all kinds of stuff you don't, or like chairs. Do you know that all different chair legs have different names? They have categories. They have rules.
Rules. Oh, there's real rules.
Rules. This data is less categorized than types of French Renaissance chair legs.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean they won't call it categories, folks. This is how it becomes confusing, right? They're using words, I mean, category, dimension, theme. They're using words that mean something very specific to them, the creator of the survey. But there is no agreed upon definition of these things.
Yeah.
And the reason that these are both important and dangerous is because even though no data comes directly from the categorization, those categories are the primary lens through which both the vendor and likely the leadership team of your organization will see the data itself. Even though all of the data only came from the answers to questions, the people that answered the questions, frankly, weren't even fully aware of this categorization, the data itself will be delivered to your organization in categories, not individual answers to questions.
Honestly, it's like they've purported to have done some kind of analysis. And I'm not suggesting all of them have no analysis. In this particular piece, it's going to look as if some type of analysis was done on the data. And what I want to suggest out loud is that this analysis has nothing to do with the data.
Right.
And everything to do with the way they decided to group the questions prior. And it's not like the SATs where it's like, these are math questions.
Yeah.
These are history questions. It's like,
it's
again,
very clear.
Right. There's purposes and the categories are defined. Not in this case.
Mm-mm.
And you were right. We shouldn't be nice to, I don't know. Now I'm getting too sassy to be
idea.
Nice to engagement surveys. I tried. I gave it a shot. Okay. Right. An example. Hypothetical survey, 50 questions. To make it easy, let's say there's 5 categories with 10 questions each.
Got it.
Good math. You can only answer the 50 questions. And when your leadership is then presented with the data from all of the employees' survey responses, it's hard to slog through the overall organization's average and then each subgroup, like each major subgroup's average for each of the 50 questions. Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Right. Assuming, okay, let's make up this hypothetical company then, okay? We made up the survey, we can make up the company. Assuming four subdivisions of the company, that's 250 question and response averages to review. And okay, even so, this daunting, yes, so how many chair leg types? And even this daunting review, okay, that would take, again, a daunting number of hours.
How many hours would that take? I can't even imagine.
Seriously. And there's like a, oh, and not even bringing into, like, even into the equation the amount of argument that you're going to get about, like, connotation, denotation, which we talked about in the last time we talked about this topic. Okay, hours and hours and hours. It's a massive oversimplification because organizations are much more complicated than that. So, okay, daunting number of hours. And then how many executive teams are actually going to sit through a detailed yet broad review like this? They're not. I'm watching, I don't know if you're watching it at all, The Diplomat, which is...
Oh, I love it. I'm already caught up, dude.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad somebody else really likes it because I have found it
so
wonderful.
Good.
Okay, good. Yeah, it, you know, it was recommended. The Netflix served it to me and I was like, meh. In it...
It's amazing.
Yeah, she says, there should really be a one-pager. No one's going to read that. It's like a folder, right? And she's like, yeah. He says, did you read your packet? She says, yeah. No, you didn't. Yeah, it's really long. There should really be a one-pager, is what she says. And it's true. I mean, honestly, executive teams, to some extent, they hire the vendor to take care of that type of thing. That's, I mean, right? And so they're making a one-pager.
Right.
To their credit, the vendor knows how these things go to a certain extent.
Oh, yeah.
Dealing with leadership teams.
We mentioned this briefly in our previous guidance, Kate, but all of this is persuasion.
Exactly.
It's designed to sell you something, but nevertheless. So all of this, the example that Kate just went through, all of the category or the all of the questions and distilling it into our organization and the sheer amount of paperwork and questions and answers and data that we'd have to go through to look at all of it individually is why categories exist, why dimensions exist, why themes exist. It's the one pager. The idea is by grouping questions, it's easier to brief the results to the leaders.
Yeah.
And all of the engagement surveys that we've seen group similar questions into categories such as management, leadership, communication, culture, compensation, mission, et cetera, et cetera. There are these groupings. And we mentioned different vendors choose different groups and different questions for different categories. So if you look closely, you're going to find that vendors have more categories in the area of their practice or expertise and less area.
Shocking.
And less categories in the areas they generally don't offer assistance. Remember, the engagement survey is designed in such a way for you as an organization to buy more of their services. A la, more of the questions are designed toward recommending things they can help you fix in your organization. And what's more, vendors who have, say, five categories will ask more questions in the categories where they can exploit their existing expertise.
Maybe this is the part where I'm nice about it. I understand why a vendor would operate this way.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think people are trying to be nefarious.
Agreed.
But I find it suspicious.
I don't think they're trying to be nefarious. I just think they're trying to make money. They're trying to make money off your organization by creating a survey that suggests
that you need them,
that you need their organization to help you fix the problem.
Right. They have a right to engage in this kind of survey creation and aggregation of data. And the activity does bear on perceptions and validity of the outcome. The thing is that surveys generated in this way bear out our comments regarding that the engagement industry is in it for themselves.
Yeah.
So in responding to an engagement survey, we should keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Where this categorization becomes dangerous is when data regarding categories are briefed to your organization, when in fact, the data only comes from the answers to individual questions. It's safe to assume that any company providing engagement surveys knows the basic rules of data analysis. The classic simple example is that you can't add up a bunch of average scores on a series of questions and then average those answers to create an average score for the category. But that doesn't mean that the vendor doesn't have an algorithm which weighs certain questions differently. And it's unlikely that they'll disclose to you their algorithm, which generates the category scores from all of the individual question scores.
Yeah, okay. Another example, your team gave you very high marks on the question, my manager keeps me informed about company plans and procedures.
Yeah.
This is an example. We're making it up.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, there'll probably be one like it. Because this behavior tends to score low, as you might imagine, and vendors know this, it probably gets weighted more highly in the communications category, algorithmic kind of roll-up of data.
Mm-hmm.
Be aware that the same question might be included in other categories roll-up, perhaps another category, maybe management, et cetera. And because other managers scored low and your vendor believes that is important,
yep.
For the record, we at Manager Tools are indifferent to its impact on results and retention, and your vendor has products and services related to it, when your company's overall low score is communicated and briefed, or I'm sorry, the score is in communication and it's being discussed, uh-huh. Right? This question will be shown as a specific and actionable area of interest for your company, which, since your company leadership wants actionable recommendations, it's really possible, even likely, in this instance, that one of the key learnings and guidance, we made up that title,
mm-hmm.
will be managers must keep their team informed of corporate plans and policies.
Exactly.
Which is a problem for you.
Oh, yeah. If you're an individual manager and you're listening to us today, we can assume that you're a Manager Tools manager, and we will do so going forward. That is, the problem for you is that your team scored well on this question because mm-hmm. you hold regular one-on-ones with your team. You have weekly staff meetings. You have your direct periodically sit in on meetings you'd normally attend, but periodically you can't. And you answer questions regularly about what you know and ping your colleagues you know with whom you have previously built trusting relations to find out more stuff about the stuff you don't know so you can share it with your team. And if you're a longtime listener of Manager Tools, you probably take all of these things for granted. I mean, it would be usual for you to think to yourself, don't all of the managers do that? No, they don't. They absolutely don't. If you practice these behaviors, you are in the top 10% of the managers in the world. Not everyone engages in these activities.
Right.
So to Kate's point, if there is this question about communications, you're probably going to rank high among peers, but you're the top 10%.
Yeah. And now your company, the entire company, has a focus on manager communications.
Yep.
Which means that despite your high level of performance in this area, you'll be asked to implement new behaviors recommended by HR and leadership or your engagement survey vendor. Despite the fact that your engagement survey vendor has never managed in your industry. And so, y'all, you could even be asked to stop doing the things that caused you to get a high score.
Yeah, high individual scores.
Because the company scored low.
Yep.
Not necessarily on this question, but in the category containing the question. And then your organization's leadership believes that these new changes will make a difference, even though you didn't have a problem to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a... It's not good. It's so not good. It's
exactly.
not good.
It's not good. And this is why we say that these dimensions are dangerous, folks. They hide from view the true problems. Out of good intent, I mean, we can't review the answers to 150 questions as a leadership team. We're never going to get through the data. We need to categorize it somehow. However, The problem is your individual scores, which are high in a certain category, will be hidden, and you'll be asked to do things that will make you less effective in an effort to help the overall organization.
Yeah. Ugh.
The moment you're a manager, you've got to learn to hire. If you want your life to be easy as a manager, you have to learn how to hire well. And Manager Tools has plenty of resources to help you do it. But what if you're hiring into a niche field? Or you're up against the latest new technical craze that you barely understand? Angel Wellman of the Southwest Research Institute solves the toughest problems in the world. And she shared with us how she hires. We've got a video, which you can purchase as part of the Executive Outlook video product, which you can find on our website, manager-tools.com/products. And in that video, you can find Angel's secret to hiring well into an incredibly hard to hire for field. Check it out.
In chapter 2, which is coming up soon, we will give you a detailed outline of how to respond to your results and also discuss how to deal with conflicts between your approach and what the organization recommends you do and their guidance for actions. Y'all, engagement surveys give us all kinds of data. The way you and your organization's results are presented often makes it hard to see your way through it.
Yeah.
And if you follow our guidance, you'll be able to navigate the politics while still making headway on how you and your team can improve results and retention.
You bet.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Kate.
That's all for today, y'all. We'll be back next week with a new topic. Bye, y'all.
Bye, everyone.